Hey everyone, welcome back to the 443 Security Simplified. I'm your host, Mark LaLiberty, and joining me today is...
Mr. Zoomy Knockreiner. Oh yeah, my name's Corey.
As he just hinted at, this episode is going to focus just about entirely on the rising popularity of the Zoom video conferencing app and some security concerns and resolutions by the Zoom team for their application. So I guess without any further ado, let's go ahead and get started. So if you're like us or many of our friends, you've probably heard of this video conferencing app that's been taking off over the past few weeks or so with everyone working and living at home. Zoom has been gaining massive popularity, even to the point where another company that happened to have a ticker symbol of ZOOM had to have its trading halted on the stock exchange recently because too many people were mistakenly buying it instead of this company's stock. I don't know if you'd heard that story. That was absolutely nuts. But it seems like everyone these days is using Zoom. And with all this increased popularity, it's also been getting a lot of increased scrutiny by security researchers. And even in just the past 7 days or so, there have been several posts about vulnerabilities, both patched and unpatched, privacy concerns with it, and then just general security or privacy issues revolving around this new phenomenon that's out there. So we want to take some time and go over a few of the flaws that have been talked about, try and explain them in a way that's easy to understand and for you to understand the impact that they might have, and then also go over some best practices for using Zoom, because the chances are, if you interact with other people at some point in time, you're going to be invited to a Zoom meeting in the next month or so.
Absolutely. Yeah, even if it's not what they use for corporations, I think one of the reasons it's so popular is as we're working at home, it's not just work from home, it's education from home, dance classes, extracurricular activity, and it seems like Zoom is the go-to. So even if it's not what your corporation actually sanctions as their official, you know, web meeting or whatever app, like Mark just said, I think you might encounter it more regularly than you think.
Exactly. So there have been a few vulnerabilities in it, like actual vulnerabilities that have been disclosed in the past few weeks. There were actually a few last year as well. I remember sometime around July last year, I think, there was a flaw that could allow an attacker to basically take over your camera on your Mac computer if you were using Zoom. They were pretty quick to patch that one. But there have been even more just in the past few weeks, obviously because of the increased scrutiny. Two main ones were just disclosed last week or so by a security researcher named Patrick Wardle. The first one was actually an issue with the way that Zoom installs itself on macOS. So Zoom's installer actually uses a deprecated API in macOS and some pre-installation scripts with elevated access, so root access, in order to install its required binaries and libraries without really any user interaction whatsoever. And the theory behind this was Zoom's kind of built itself to be this easy to use, it just works application. And so they use this as a bit of a shortcut to get past some of the installation frustrations that some users might encounter. But like I mentioned, these APIs are actually deprecated by macOS. And these days, they're most commonly used by malware as a way to bypass a lot of user interaction when trying to gain access to a system. The reason this is a vulnerability is an attacker could actually modify the Zoom binary, so the Zoom application, with their own malicious code. And because this installation method doesn't validate the binary, it could allow a piece of malware to basically elevate its privileges from just user access to system access. Corey, you want to explain that one a little more too?
I think you covered most of it.
So this is one where it makes a bad infection worse. So the attacker already has to be on the system, but it does give them system level or root level access then to basically do whatever they want on it.
And so essentially, you know, if you use a Mac, you know that even though you probably logged in with a credential that already has like a system administrator privileges, if you ever install something or do something, usually there's an additional request for a login there where you have this kind of would get past that, right? Because you would immediately have all the privilege you need for that and could do anything without any additional pop-up or password from the victim that you're actually hacking.
Yep. The second vulnerability discovered by this researcher is in the way that Zoom has access to the microphone and camera on macOS. So typically, macOS applications need some sort of explicit permission from the user in order to access the microphone or camera. You've probably seen a little pop-up or pop-under saying, do you want to allow access to whichever microphone you have enabled? But Zoom actually has an exception, which means that if an attacker can inject malicious code into the Zoom process, which we've seen quite a few examples recently of malware injecting into a otherwise legitimate process. It's a very common form of fileless malware. With that access, they could then access the camera or microphone without prompting the user, basically. So again, another vulnerability where it makes a bad attack worse. So this gives malware already on the system a little more access without the user knowing, but still technically a vulnerability.
And this one, by the way, even though it allows you to access the audio and the camera without the user's permission, it doesn't stop the light from popping up, right? So I guess one practical sign that this is happening is you probably have a Mac where the light does appear when your webcam is on. Well, there have been past attacks where bad guys have been able to disable that type of thing. This is not necessarily that. It would show up, you know. Your webcam may turn on its own, but you have a thing you can look at to know this.
Yep. And the good news is both of these have since been patched. Zoom's actually done a pretty good job recently of making sure that as they're receiving these reports, they get them patched pretty quickly in their application. And we'll actually, a little bit later, get into one of their new initiatives now on being more proactive about that too.
But there are new ones, right?
Also,
there is a new one. Right?
Correct, yes. You want to chat about, so there's another one in the Windows version of Zoom. Is that something you want to chat about, Corey?
You're welcome to mention it, but this one came out on April Fool's Day, I believe, but it was not an April Fool's joke. It's a classic UNC path injection vulnerability that, by the way, it's something that happened in Windows OS. You know, there's lots of programs and even Windows applications where people found this class of UNC path injection vulnerability. But ultimately, because of it, if other applications suffer from this vulnerability, it gives attackers the ability to actually steal and do a lot against Windows. And I mean, this to really the basic takeaway is, if you're running the Windows version of the Zoom client that's not patched, a bad guy could potentially get your actual Windows credentials from this vulnerability and do anything you could on your system.
Yeah. So with this particular attack, really the main issue is that Zoom converts UNC paths into clickable links in the chat messages now too, which means that if someone tricked you into clicking on a link, one of these malicious links in the chat, your computer would then try and connect to that IP address or that destination and then authenticate to it using your network credentials, which means that an attacker could sniff out those network credentials. They would at least be hashed, but they could then use a tool like Hashcat in order to crack them and basically steal your password just by you clicking on a link.
And they don't need to use Hashcat, right? Again, I mean, you could pass the, depending on your access to the network already, you might be able to exploit past the hash capabilities if you are already inside.
Yep. So still a vulnerability, but again, another one that you can at least mitigate against it. A really interesting story just came out, I think yesterday or the day before, as of us recording this, and it was published on security journalist Brian Krebs's website, where he basically talked with the author of this new tool called ZWarDial. And it revolves around this new trend that's been going on with Zoom because of its popularity called Zoom bombing, which is basically individuals trying to find unprotected Zoom meetings, hopping in, and then either shouting profanity or putting up pornographic videos as their screen share, basically ways to disrupt that meeting. And this ZWarDial tool was developed by some security researchers as a way to automate finding these unprotected meetings. Corey, you actually chatted about this in an interview just the other day, I think, right?
Yeah, is it Kansas City they're from? I know it's some KC City researchers or the group that you mentioned that found this, but I think one particular guy, he has a real name, but let's use his alias, it's Serbo. You know, you mentioned Zoom bombing. Zoom bombing is pretty simple. You might realize that if you use any sort of, you know, a lot of these web conference apps give you this option of just this random meeting URL. And for Zoom, it, you know, if you look at any meeting URL, it's zoom.us/j, and then there's a 9 to 11 digit part of the URL that is really your Zoom meeting ID. And they, of course, just generate those on demand, depending on what type of meeting you're selecting, whether it's a private meeting, or I'm sorry, whether it's a meeting just for your user, or if you want to use their randomized function. But all Zoom bombing is in general is the idea of trying to join active Zoom meetings. So one way to find them is just to brute force those random meeting IDs. So being that I'm Pop Pop Corey, my version of a war dialer was well known from back in the day of Freaky, and it's simply war dialing's the same thing. Back in the day, you had to find a phone number that had a modem connected to it to try to find random computers to connect to. So we would just have scripts that would randomly go through every single phone number in our area code to find these modems. And this Z war dial is essentially the same thing. It's just kind of randomizing, looking for those meeting IDs by incrementing or randomly checking all kinds of potentially valid Zoom IDs until it finds them. Z war dial has a couple of features. Like, for instance, this is not the first time someone has realized that you could actually find existing meeting IDs, whether they're Zoom or someone else. I believe it was Checkpoint a few months back did some specific research actually showing this exact problem for Zoom, that you could, you know, by doing this sort of random script, you could find the IDs. But what Zdial, you know, Zwiredial does is it, one, it makes a script for it. But two, Zoom is actually monitoring for this type of thing. From Zoom's perspective, if they can see a computer, specifically an IP address on the internet, that continuously is trying to connect to multiple Zoom meeting IDs, they can monitor for that and maybe block IP addresses that are obvious bad actors. But one of the small things that Zwiredial does is it actually leverages the Tor network, the onion routing network that me and Mark have talked about before. As you know, depending on what type of Tor user you are, you might actually contribute to the Tor network and offer an exit node so that lots of other computers with different IPs end up being exit nodes. And basically, Zwiredial is leveraging the Tor network to make this attack come from different looking IPs, which makes it a little harder for Zoom to monitor. And then basically, you know, all the rest of the stuff that Zwiredial does, when it connects to this meeting ID, of course, it needs to try to parse or pay attention to the web response that the Zoom.us web app gives back to it to basically see, is there a meeting here? Is there one going on right now? Or is there one scheduled? Again, Zoom has done a number of mitigating things to try to make it harder, to make it obvious, but there's all kinds of headers and cookies that Zwiredial does. And the long story short, it just randomly tries a lot of Zoom IDs. It's smart enough to figure out to see if there's a meeting in progress or coming, and it records all those results. And I think the researcher had lots of very cool stats where, you know, just in some hours or a day of running, they were able to find thousands of meetings quite easily. And they, of course, talk about that. It's just one computer. If you spun this up with lots of computers, it would be theoretically possible to pretty much find every Zoom ID meeting for that day.
Yeah, so they mentioned that a single instance running this application could find approximately 100 meetings per hour, and that for any given meeting number, it had about a 14% success rate, which is pretty crazy for this type of tool that's supposedly mitigated on their end. Now, the authors of this tool and Zoom all say that the best mitigation for this is to use passwords to protect your meeting. And by default now, all new meetings are created with a password too, which is one of the new things Zoom's done to mitigate it.
But to your point, I actually think there is no mitigation that can block this, because ultimately Zoom needs to get a random user on the internet to be able to know if a meeting's there or not, just for the application to work. So I actually don't expect Zoom to fix this. And by the way, I think every other meeting app out there, many of them use these type of random IDs. So because Zoom is so popular, the industry is poking at Zoom and talking about this in context of Zoom. But pretty much, if you have a passwordless meeting on any web app that has a random ID, someone could find it, come on, bomb and grief your meeting. So we're talking about this, you know, the media is talking about how bad this is. But the truth is, even before news of this came out, that password, while it may not have always been default, that password option's always been there. So really, for this type of attack, there's tons of Zoom settings and other webinar settings that you can add to prevent it. The simplest thing is what you just said, Mark, is a password. And at least if you keep that password to your meeting people, theoretically, no one should get in. On top of that, you can add multi-factor to Zoom. In fact, you can do it using WatchGuard AuthPoint. That would further help you. But then there's all kinds of great settings people could use, even if this ever occurred. Like, for instance, one setting you can choose to do in Zoom and other meeting apps is not let somebody immediately enter the meeting the moment they click on it and join an existing meeting. There's this concept of a waiting room. It takes a little more work from the Zoom host or the webinar host, where every time someone joins, you as the moderator or host have to say, yes, let them in, yes, let them in, over and over again. But if you're worried about this stuff, you don't even have to worry about Zoom fixing it, just use that setting. Likewise, as the host, you're able to mute anyone forever on the meeting. You're able to kick people from meetings. So I actually think this one's interesting in concept. Zwardial is kind of an interesting tool, but I think it's kind of a much ado about nothing issue, in that there have already been tons of settings that any Zoom user could have used even 3 months ago to prevent this type of attack from actually hurting their meeting.
Yep. But if you aren't using one of those protection things and you still are using an unprotected meeting, chances are you will probably get hit by this, because now there's even, so ZDNet actually just posted an article today as we're recording, highlighting just how prevalent these griefers and nay-do-gooders are on the internet trying to find meetings to go bomb. Like, they point out there's 30 public Discord channels for Zoom bombing. There's 3 subreddits on Reddit, 2 of which have actually been banned, which is good. There's a bunch of Twitter accounts that you can follow where people can tweet conference codes and even passwords to them if they really, like, I don't know, hate their company or someone they have access to. And they'll broadcast them out to the internet for anyone to join. And there's threads on just multiple hacking forums as well, all for finding meetings and sharing meetings that have been found to go bomb. Like, it's one of those things where, because it's so popular now and there's people out there that just, like you said, griefing other people, if you don't take the steps to protect your meeting, it's going to be a pretty big issue going forward.
Absolutely. Yep. But again, simple steps to fix it. At the very least, make sure that default password that you use it. Just so people know out there, just for specific details, well, as Mark said, Zoom did institute that the passworded meeting is a default now. In there early, when they first pushed that out, which I actually think was a while ago, they did it in a way that people could also opt out of it, because I guess one of Zoom's benefits, one of the reasons it seems to be popular, even though there's many web conferencing apps like it, is its ease of use. So apparently they did give some people the way to opt out of it. So maybe double check your settings so that you know those defaults are applying. Because as easy it is to set up a meeting without a password, nowadays we highly recommend against it. You should at the very least be using that password feature.
Yep. So let's pivot from vulnerabilities real quick to a privacy concern that popped up too as well during all this increased scrutiny. So for the longest time during in Zoom's marketing material, they said that it uses end-to-end encryption, which actually has a very specific meaning in terms of a technology. It means that the communication between you and the other end of whatever you're chatting on, so a video call in this case, or maybe a chat, It means that the encryption happens in the application on your client side so that no one in the middle of that connection on the network, and then not even the company that made it themselves, can have access to that content. Some examples of this are WhatsApp, for example. You can set up protected encrypted communications where not even Facebook, who owns WhatsApp, can get the contents of that message. And it's actually caused a bit of butting heads between companies like Facebook and Apple, who has it in iOS, and government organizations that are trying to gain access to these encrypted communications because they flat out can't. It is not possible because the encryption happens locally on the client. So in Zoom's case, they don't actually use end-to-end encryption. In their case, they use something called transport encryption, which is basically like an HTTPS connection. It means that your connection over the network from your client to the other end is encrypted, but Zoom has the ability to still decrypt that in the middle to facilitate setting up this multi-point to multi-point meeting, because it's actually really difficult to deploy end-to-end encryption in a multi-point setup, so like a video conference with 20 people, because typically that would mean every single participant has to negotiate a key exchange with every single other participant. And then that means they have a whole bunch of encrypted channels between each other, and you would have to duplicate that video that you're sending between each of them. So the network bandwidth would be astronomical, the setup time would be rough, and that's why they aren't currently using it. But it's important to point out that their marketing material at that point in time was incorrect. And they did at least put out a statement saying, yeah, we recognize now that we made a mistake and our definition of end-to-end encryption did not match the traditional description of end-to-end encryption.
That's cool of them transparency-wise. It's nice that they actually, you know, sometimes the terms we use, like end-to-end encryption, while they might sound general, like you can use them in a number of ways, they have very clear meaning. So on one hand, I can see marketing or even less security specific, Zoom's not a security company, they're a meeting app company, I can see them accidentally misusing terms. So it's good that at very least when the community, you know, shared this with them, they are actually changing it and fessing up to it. So that's a positive.
Yeah. And in all honesty, like, it might seem like we're bashing Zoom throughout this episode, but they've done a pretty dang good job of responding to all of these security concerns and reports from external people. They even just put out a blog post the other day basically saying, hey, this is amazing. Like, we've been growing like crazy for the past 2 weeks. We've just literally been trying to stay afloat with our increased popularity. But now for the next 90 days,
before we go to that mitigation, Mark, there's one vulnerability I don't think we covered that's not really Zoom's.
Sure.
That's not Zoom's fault. But the one other thing I did want to bring up on attacks against Zoom is Checkpoint released a blog post a while back to warn the world that there's a lot of Zoom-related phishing too. So Checkpoint, you know, COVID-19 obviously is part of what increases Zoom's popularity. And among them, monitoring new registrations of domain names and seeing a lot of COVID-related domain names, because a lot of classrooms and schools are using Zoom, they've started to see a lot of Zoom-related domain registrations. Now, they things like Zoom-US-Zoom or something like that, or even maybe some classroom-related registrations, which are these specialized URLs that sometimes classrooms are using and attaching to Zoom. So just the final thing I want to warn our audience about is, besides the Zoom-specific issues, you know, as you're connecting to meetings, whether it be Zoom or otherwise, pay attention quite a bit to the URL. Phishers are aware of the apps that are popular, and they're trying to take advantage that Zoom meetings are popular, and they're starting to spam out fishy URLs that happen to look similar to Zoom URLs. But with that said, I'll transition. Go ahead.
And another tip for that really is one way that they're sending this is malicious attachments to emails too, so it looks like a Zoom executable that they'll attach to an email. Zoom will never send you the actual meeting software via email. It'll be a link to their site that you download, and it'll auto-launch and install. They'll never attach it to an email. So that's a real quick giveaway for one of these types of phishes too.
Yeah. And now that we covered that kind of last attack vector they're using, you were talking about how well Zoom has been doing trying to react to this. What were you telling us besides their blog post?
So yeah, they're shutting down basically feature development for their application for the next 90 days. And they said over the next 90 days, they're going to focus specifically on proactively identifying and resolving security issues across their applications, which is great. Like, it's really difficult to convince a company, especially one that's growing as quickly as Zoom is, to shut down feature development and stuff that differentiates them from their competitors. But they're doing that for the next 3 months just to make their application more secure. And I really wanted to point that out because it's commendable by them.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. Like, Zoom seems to be getting a lot of backlash in the press. And while I don't think you or I support officially any one of these web conference communication platforms or another, it seems like the whether it's the press or the researchers or users poking at them, it seems like they're getting this bad security name. But the truth is, lots of web conferencing programs have similar issues. And as you and I have said over and over, it's not the fact that a company sometimes have vulnerabilities. Even security companies sometimes have vulnerabilities. It's how they react to them. And you made it very clear, and I absolutely agree, that Zoom has been very reactive. And even things like Zoom bombing and stuff isn't, you know, that's something that's going to happen whether or not your program's secure or not. They offer lots and lots of features that you, the Zoom user, can actually use to secure your meetings. And while they have had software vulnerabilities that are their mistakes, they seem pretty reactive to fixing them. So if someone were to ask, is Zoom worse than any other web conferencing app out there? I don't think I would say so. I think it's probably similar for all of them. The reason we're hearing so much about Zoom is exactly what you said earlier. They just really are popular lately. They happen to be being used. And I think part of it has to do with they do differentiate a bit with ease of use.
Exactly. So I guess if we're going to have some takeaways for this, really, there are ways that you can secure your setup if you're going to use Zoom. First off, and at a minimum, add a password to your meetings. It's basically like an access ID if you're familiar with a GoToMeeting setup, where it's just a second number that someone would have to brute force before they could gain access to your meeting. And it makes it significantly more difficult to the point where I'd say it's basically impossible unless someone takes that meeting ID, steals it, and gives it to someone else. When it comes to your Zoom account, they support multi-factor authentication integrations using SAML with other multi-factor providers like Authpoint. So be sure to set that up to secure your account itself. Like, that basically follows our authentication recommendations anywhere. And that if you can set up multi-factor, set it up, period, regardless of the account.
While we're talking about Zoom's features, though, also pay attention. As a moderator, there's a lot of features in Zoom that I think go underused. So remember, just be familiar with what you can do as a Zoom host. Be familiar with the waiting room. Be familiar with the way you can mute others on demand. You can remove others on demand. So I do know things like a waiting room adds a little more work to the moderator or the host's job. And that's why, you know, I know Zoom is easy to use and it's nice just to click in and get everyone talking. But if you're doing something at your company that really is secure, maybe have a waiting room, maybe have a more heavily moderated meeting, and maybe use the mute more often. And what was the last tip you were mentioning?
Don't be like the United Kingdom's, what was it? Like, they're effectively their chiefs of staff that tweeted out a picture of their Zoom meeting with the meeting ID up in the corner and apparently wasn't even password protected.
Oops.
Yeah, don't do that. And then also just be on the lookout for phishing-related scams. Like we mentioned, I think in every single podcast in the last month, with big events like COVID-19 and now the popularity of Zoom, you're going to see a lot more phishing campaigns that prey on that popularity. So just be more skeptical anytime you receive either an unsolicited email or even an expected one. Check the links you're going to. Don't open applications that are attached to emails. I mean, I feel like we should have known that from decades ago, but still, don't do that. And just be careful with what you're clicking and what you're entering usernames and passwords into.
Sounds good. Let's go meet up on Zoom and talk about how we're going to edit this podcast, Mark.
Exactly. One final takeaway, I guess, is find a really cool background for your Zoom meeting.
Yeah, if you have the right green screen app, you might be able to do some funny things with some of those face pictures. We'll just leave it at that.
Not that Corey's been doing that all day today or anything.
Fun times. Have the best words, the bestest words, the biggest ones.
Get out. Stop. Hey, everyone. Thanks again for listening. As always, if you enjoyed today's episode, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. If you have any questions on today's topics or suggestions for future episode topics, you can reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at @XORRO_. Corey is @SecAdept. And the both of us are @#The443Podcast. Thanks again for listening, and you'll hear from us next week.
Webcam you later.
Webcam you later.